Good morning, everyone, and welcome. Welcome to those here in church on this beautiful summer's morning, and welcome to those joining us via the web camera. Just a reminder that we are one community gathered here this morning, and welcome to anyone who happens to listen in to our podcast at a later date. We begin with our opening words. We bid you welcome who come with weary spirit seeking rest, who come with troubles that are too much with you, who come suffering or afraid. We bid you welcome who come with hope in your heart, who come with anticipation in your step, who come happy and joyous. We bid you welcome who are seekers of a new faith, who come to probe and explore, who come to learn. We bid you welcome who entered this sanctuary as a homecoming, who have found here room for your soul, who find in this people a community. Whoever you are, whatever you are, wherever you are on your journey, we bid you welcome. Our chalice lighting. Let us rejoice in the brightness of this day, in the brightness and warmth of the summer sun, in the blossoming of new life. Let us rejoice in the earth with its birds and flowers, its fruits and many hidden treasures. Let us give thanks for this day. Now we'll have our first hymn this morning, and it's hymn number 298. Wake now my senses and hear the earth call. Hymn number 298. The Persian poet Rumi challenges us. Come, come. Whoever you are, wanderer, worshipper, lover of leaving, ours is no caravan of despair. Come, yet again come. And we come from rich heritages of liturgy and pomp. We come from burning legacies of angry gods and threats of hellfire. We come just as we are. We come with exuberant and joyful hearts, eager to witness to others. We come bereft of the goodness of life, wandering, hesitant. We come just as we are. We come in the bloom of youth, ready to explore new truths. We come ready to sit and be nourished for an hour. We come with grey in our hair and experiences to share. We come just as we are. We come to this place with a recognition of coming home. We come to this home that this does not impose beliefs, but does ask that we keep an open mind. We come just as we are to join our brothers and sisters as members of one family in this beloved home. Our hands and hearts at peace and outstretched. Come, yet again come. Let us come into the peace of this community. Can we now join together to say words that attempt to articulate the aims of our community? They're found on the last page of your hymn book. Love is the doctrine of this church. The quest of truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge in freedom, to serve mankind in fellowship, to the end that all souls shall grow in harmony with the divine, this do we covenant with each other and with God. Our reader this morning is Janet.
Morning, everybody. Thank you to Marcus for organising such a lovely walk in the woods yesterday. We had such a lovely time. We went to Avondale, and there was a half a dozen of us, like-minded people, and we sort of melted into our surrounds. Thank you also to Pam, who does our weekly meditation. And it was Pam that introduced me to the book from which I'm going to read. It's titled Still Points, and it's by Brother Richard. So between the walk in the woods yesterday and Pam's introduction, I came across a beautiful few lines titled Woodwalking. And they just invite us to think about trees and to really appreciate them and to enjoy them. And I hope you enjoy it. Woodwalking. When you walk in the woods, do so at their pace, not yours. Pause before you enter their embrace and breathe deep. Slow down to their ancient pace of root and branch and story. Then, with a bow, enter and allow their cathedral coolness to enfold you, and their green delight to anoint you with sylvan sacrament of stained glass dappling, and your healing will begin. As over the craggy, bare nerves of your busyness and sharp exhaustion, and the rough edges of your broken heart, a gentling of moss will begin to grow as slowly as blessing. Feel their tallness stretch you, their deep, dark womb you, their leaf and flower and knot circle you with knowing of a kind unknown to fleeting minds and restless-hearted humanity, greening you to wholeness again. Passing into their sanctuary, stop and become one with them. Let them teach you their communion mystery, their secret homing of rustling life that feathered sings and furred shelters both beneath and above. Listen long enough and they will teach you their tongue, words of wood and weather and water, united in one song of praise that began with the first divinely led step into the dance of interbreathing that you have forgotten to sing until now. Sit your tiredness down in the crook of their rooted gathering, with your back trunked, and let them be your spine, just for a while. Your sap will rise with theirs in the fourfold benediction of the treed seasons which foreshadowed their glorious gifting of their own element to be the rude throne of the word by whom all is spoken. Touching their great slowness, be reborn of their wisdom that promises for every winter a spring and roots deep enough to outlast any summer drought until autumn's coolness comes. when eventually you rise from their embrace, stretch to the heavens and breathe deep of their largesse, while ground gripping with toe-tap root. Their knowing, now with you once again, will dust you golden like pollen falling in the breeze. Then bow deeply to your elders and fellow servants, and walk back to your life, now luminous once again. When you walk the woods, do so at their pace, not yours.
Thank you, Janet. As ever, we have to have a children's story because we're all children here. No age limit on it. And this is a story about, it's a Jewish rabbi, and he was a very, very good rabbi. He loved visiting his families and his care, and he was great with people, and he would sit down, have a couple with them, and they would tell them their problems. And he was very wise, and he would often have a good solution for their problems. The problem was that he realized that very few people ever took his advice. He was really wasting his breath. But that didn't stop them complaining, you know. And one Sunday, he decided to do something about this because he just heard the same problems over and over again. He offered various solutions. None were taken, and it went on in a circle. So the next Sunday, he was the rabbi. He would have his Sabbath day. And instead of preaching to them, he told them a joke. And it was a really good joke. They all found it hilariously funny. They really enjoyed it, had a good belly laugh, and everyone was cheered up for a while. And the next Saturday, when they met again, he went in and he says, "I have a joke to tell you. Once upon a time," and he told the same joke again, exactly the same. Now, the second time, there was a few people who hadn't heard it the week before, and they found it very funny. The rest of them sort of smiled, you know, but a bit strained. Third Saturday in a row, they're meeting again, and he says, "I have a great joke for you." And he told the same story. Well, this time, people didn't laugh. They were just looking at him very peculiarly. And he said, "I notice no one is laughing today," he said. He said, "You know, it's telling jokes is like telling your problems. If you just keep repeating the problem over and over again, it doesn't get you anywhere and it doesn't get a reasonable response. You tell me your problems, I suggest solutions, you ignore them. Same with me telling the same joke every week. You have to do something differently." We're going to have our second hymn now, and it's hymn number 205, "Amazing Grace." How sweet the sound. Hymn number 205. For my reading, I have chosen a piece written by Sister Stanislaus Kennedy, and it's called "Rainbow Moments." And she begins with the quotation, "What is this life if full of care, we have no time to stand and stare?" Rainbows are a gift. They come quite unexpectedly, apparently from nowhere, and they can capture our attention that almost no other natural phenomenon can. Someone looks out of the window and points and said, "Look, do you see the rainbow?" And everyone looks and everyone wonders and everyone is surprised. A rainbow is an invitation to stand and stare. When we enjoy moments like that, we are learning to live in the moment with an open heart. Living with an open heart means being aware of the now. Because the present moment is finite. If we anticipate it, that changes it. When we consent to stop and live in the present moment without thinking back to the past or straining forward to the future, something extraordinary takes place within us. We become conscious of two things. The first is that this moment is the only one we are sure of, and the only moment we are asked to live. The second is that God is radically present now, always now. God is only as close as the present moment. Our lives last only a moment, and the challenge for us is to live that moment. The problem is that it is difficult to live always in the moment. Our minds are in a constant state of flux. No thought, no feeling, no sensation, it seems, lasts more than an instant before it is changed or is changed by a different state, thought or sensation, and then it is changed yet again. With minds like this, to sit still is very difficult, and to live in the creative tension between now and not yet is not easy, between what is and what might be. We can only do this by making a conscious effort to stop and stare and look afresh by entering deliberately into this present moment. The best way I know to learn to live in the present moment is to take time quite deliberately to notice and acknowledge the various states and thoughts that pass through our minds, to watch the moments in our minds unfolding moment by moment, thought by thought, feeling by feeling. If you take even 5 minutes in the day and focus inwards, and then try counting how many states come and go within those 5 minutes, you will probably be amazed at what you discover. At first, you may not notice so many. But if you are faithful to the practice, you will start to notice literally hundreds of subtle changes within those 5 minutes. Gradually, you can increase the amount of time you spend deliberately focusing on the present moment, and eventually it will become something that you'll find yourself returning to during the day. This practice of noting our states of mind as they arise keeps us present in the moment. In the Zen tradition, this is called polishing the mirror. The greater our consciousness of each moment, the more we can begin to let go of the states that control our behavior, and consequently, we can develop greater clarity and better vision. Learning to practice this living in the present moment is a slow process and can be a struggle, but once you begin to make it part of how you live, it brings extraordinary peace of mind. Words from Sister Stan. This following prayer was written by someone from a Chinese person called Chung Min Ko, and he wrote it while he was imprisoned and under very difficult circumstances. Lord, I asked for a bunch of fresh flowers, but instead you gave me an ugly cactus with so many thoughts, with so many thorns. I asked you, Lord, for some beautiful butterflies, but instead you gave me many ugly and dreadful worms. I felt bereft, betrayed. I was disappointed. I mourned. But after many days, suddenly I saw the cactus bloom with many exquisite and beautiful flowers. And what I thought were worms became beautiful butterflies flying in the spring wind. God's ways are mysterious. We now have a time of silence, and Josh will bring this to an end with a piece of music. This morning's title is Living and Loving the Questions, and I begin with a quotation. Be patient towards all that is unresolved in your heart, and try to love the questions themselves. They are like locked rooms, and like books that are now written in a very foreign tongue. Do not seek to know the answers which cannot be given to you, because you would not be able to live them. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Perhaps then, gradually, without noticing, you will live along some distant day into the answer. And that's the end of the quotation. Those words are from a German poet, Rene Maria Rilke. I came across them a few years ago, and when I first read it, they spoke to my Unitarian mindset. Unitarians love questions, questions about God, the nature of God, the purpose of life, and the great mystery of death. And these were questions I loved. I joined this church because of its honesty in admitting that we don't have all the answers. That is one thing that drew me to this place. As one summary of Unitarianism puts it, Unitarians know that we don't even know all the questions, not to talk about answers. Unitarianism is a minority religion, and I believe that one reason for this is that we do not and cannot offer certainty. Every other religion say with conviction that their faith has all the answers and their answers are the correct ones. I found living with these questions invigorating. I want to know about other faiths. I love to trace the threads they have in common. And I love the freedom we have to take from each only the elements that speak to me as being truthful and useful. I realize that I may be in a minority and that what most people want from religion is certainty, while in the only answers Unitarians have is more questions. Questions and possibilities, as well as great coffee and, I think, really interesting company at the coffee. However, life is a learning process, and illness has taught me and brought me to a new perspective on Rilke's words. And for me, this is a tough lesson. I'm still in the process of coming to terms and negotiating my way to answers. Unlike Rilke's question, these questions have a nasty habit that they never sit quietly in the back of the mind. They're always there, ready to take flight and seemingly to multiply. What I have been thinking about is this. I've come to realize that I was born under a very lucky star. My childhood was not a golden period in my life. There were family bereavements at a young age. I wasn't born into wealth or privilege. But my childhood gave me a great deal of resilience. I was given the gift of good health, adequate intelligence, and born at a time when Ireland began to move towards a more meritocracy in its society. And a good education opened many doors for me. And my adult life has been very stable and very happy. I believed that if I applied myself, there would be very little I could not achieve. And probably like most people, I imagined myself aging gracefully in reasonable comfort, and there would be years into the distance. But life has more lessons for me, and one of those is living with uncertainty. Hospital visits, consultants' appointments, tests, waiting for results of tests. Friends, of course, all seem to be planning holidays, extensions to their homes, the new kitchen, changing the bathroom. And when I hear that, I find myself going, ouch. Can I go back to the other, more familiar, easier questions? Because the current questions are not easy, and I certainly don't love them. So I have learned that my enjoyment of living with questions is selective. And I may throw a tantrum because of the situation, but I come back and the questions are still there. And then I come to those things that I realize that the only freedom I have is how I try to live the questions. Will I one day learn to love the questions? The jury's still out on that one. But the good news is that the questions teased out in this community, the readings I have heard, are all pointers that help deal with those questions. And here are a few pointers that I have found useful. The interesting thing about finding useful pointers is, maybe this is just me, but I have to keep reminding myself of them. I can actually get into situations where I forget to use the useful pointers, and then you go back to them and say, yeah, I should remember that. That is really useful. When the questions pile up, it's easy to forget those pointers, and you need to go back. And two of my favorite ones are Rumi and Hafiz. They're always go-to for me. Hafiz's quotation from one of his poems is, "The place where you are right now, God circled on a map for you." Now, I find this helpful. Not that I think for one moment that there is some being called God up there somewhere, drawing circles on maps for me or anyone else. But I do believe that there is purpose to everything that happens in life. Whatever happens to me is my destiny. Now, be that God circles or me deciding before I was born that I needed to learn these lessons, it doesn't matter. It's just, this is life, this is what helps me, this is what I need to deal with. So I try to take something positive from the experience. I try to remember to make every moment the best moment it can be. We can never repeat any moment. And we don't have to think beyond it. And that is where we make a lot of our mistakes, thinking beyond this present moment. We just need to be present in this present moment. Rumi's poem, The Guest House, has always been a favourite with me. It's a reminder, again, as Sister Stan said, how your mind changes from moment to moment. And the poem reads like this. "This, being human, is a guest house, every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond." Just to repeat those last three lines. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. This is my reminder that every experience has a purpose. and every experience will pass in time. Hafiz and Rumi were from the Islamic tradition, but they echoed the teaching of the Buddha, who lived so much before they did, who said that the nature of life is change, and we suffer because we refuse and resist living this truth. We don't want change. We want some things to stay the same. We want some things, selective things, to change. We don't accept that everything changes. As in Sister Stan's reading, if we take even 5 minutes of reflection, we can see how our thoughts change second by second. Rumi said, every morning there's a new arrival, but every second seems to bring a new arrival in our thinking. The Buddha thought that our suffering is intensified by how we label our experiences as being good or bad. I think we're all guilty of that. I hope that doesn't happen to me, or this doesn't happen, or I want something to happen. That would be wonderful. Rilke echoes the Buddha when he wrote, perhaps all the dragons in our lives are princesses who are only waiting to see us being beautiful and brave. We label things dragons or princesses, things we want, things we don't want. We have to stop labeling things. Resist labeling experience. They are simply an opportunity to learn and maybe practice being beautiful and brave. In this morning's reading, Sister Stan mentioned rainbow moments and how quickly something such as a rainbow can bring us to a joyful place. I think that was echoed in Janet's readings about being present in the woods. But I have learned that it is essential to make rainbow moments every day. I find most of my rainbow moments in the world of nature. The beauty of a flower, the smell of a rose, birdsong, all of them are rainbow moments. Another sure way to create a moment, a rainbow moment, is cultivating a sense of gratitude. There's nothing like being grateful and knowing what you're grateful for that brings a rainbow moment. Some people may be surprised when I say that it has never crossed my mind to pray for a cure. I do believe in a life force that I am happy to call God. I don't believe that this life force is there to selectively grant wishes and deny other ones. The idea that God at a whim answers prayer is for me a perversion of God. So it has never occurred to me to pray for cures, for anything. I do regularly ask for the grace to enable me to live the questions. In my experience, that type of prayer is of enormous benefit. And I think it's one of the things Unitarians find difficult if they hear somebody is very ill. Do you pray for them? I don't think praying for them to be cured works. That's my belief. Others may feel differently, but the prayer is never wasted if you put it in terms of praying that that person gets whatever they need. Be it a kind word, meeting somebody, being cheered up, but whatever they need, that helps everyone. I find living with the question intensifies living itself. Before these questions came into my orbit, I think I spent a great deal of time living from habit, could nearly predict what I was doing from one day to the next. Now I have a greater appreciation for the gift of life. I'm still a long way from loving the questions, mind you. But I'm going to finish this address with another quotation from Rilke. He said, "Let everything happen to you, beauty and terror. Just keep going. No feeling is final. Let everything happen to you, beauty and terror. Just keep going. No feeling is final." Amen. We're going to have our third hymn now, and this is hymn number 207, "Earth Was Given as a Garden." Lovely, simple hymn. Lovely sentiments in it. The offertory will now be taken. Our notices. First of all, very important notice to start off with. A member of the congregation who has been renting an apartment, the owner has died, the family want to sell the apartment. She urgently needs to rent a new apartment. If anyone knows an apartment for rent, can you let us know? And this person, there's no HAP involved. She's well able to pay the rent. She's a wonderful tenant. She won't wreck the place or anything like that, but just really need help with that. Fair trade tea and coffee are served downstairs, and everyone is welcome to join us. Wednesday, the usual lunchtime meditation service is available in the church and online. Just to say, last week we had the plant sale in aid of the Cork Church, and that was very successful. It raised €525. So thank you, everyone, for being so generous buying plants, and I hope they all grow wonderfully well, and your tomatoes produce tomatoes and all the rest. The book club meet at the end of the month, and this is the 29th of May, and they meet via Zoom, and also in the vestry in person. Kevin, our caretaker, is going to move out. So Kevin has two more Sundays with us, and then it'll be very changed here. We won't have Kevin any longer. So we wish Kevin good luck then. There's, I think, maybe one copy of Osgiliath left on the table, but there are copies of the Inquirer this month, and this is really a takeover of the Inquirer magazine by Irish Unitarians. The front is a picture for an article by Aidan O'Driscoll, which takes up three pages plus the front cover. The back cover is taken up by an article about Cork, and then the other two pages, "Our Faith Is Not Complicated," was written by Reverend Linda Kane, who's in Cairncastle in Northern Ireland. So do take a copy of that. Of great interest for this country. We'll have our final hymn now, and it's hymn number 159. "This Is My Song, O God of All the Nations." Hymn number 159. Our blessing are those words from Rilke. Be patient towards all that is unsolved in your heart and try to love the questions themselves. They're like locked rooms or books that are written in a very foreign tongue. Do not seek the answers which cannot be given to you because you would not be able to live them. And the point is to live everything. Live everything. Amen.